WAER Sports proudly presents the Ostrom Avenue Podcast.
Goalpost goes down for just the seventh time in program history. Syracuse football has secured a top 10 win in the Dome.
Freeman straight away elevates and slams. Ladies and gentlemen, Donnie Freeman is here in the 315.
And it's misery at the hands of Maryland. Syracuse, with its closest shot at a championship in over a decade, gets sent home.
Hearing from a host of guests.
Super excited to welcome back onto the podcast the voice of Syracuse men's lacrosse, Tim Leonard.
Now, Jason Benetti, voice of the Detroit Tigers.
And providing all the hot takes.
If Syracuse beats Miami, there are no questions. This program is headed in the right direction. Fran Brown is the leader of the future.
These are guys that can make impacts on day one. You're going to see that presence. That just when Syracuse in the past, when you look at their offensive line and defensive line, they were undersized in committing penalties. Now, they might still commit penalties. Who knows? But at least you know they're not going to be undersized.
It's the Ostrom Avenue Podcast, and it starts right now.
Welcome into the Ostrom Avenue Podcast. AJ Myers alongside Griffin Bloomsteed and Josh Rofford. And holy smokes, a lot has happened since the last time I was on the pod. Syracuse men's basketball season is over. So too is Adrian Autry's tenure. No surprise there. Don't really need to share my thoughts on it. We knew it was coming. Do feel for Adrian Autry. He dedicated much of his life to Syracuse athletics and now Syracuse basketball. And now he won't ever be a part of it again. Hopefully he finds another coaching job, later down the line in a few years. It'll be interesting to see what happens, with Coach Autry. But then there was a new athletic director, Ryan Blair, was hired out of left field. And we're going to talk about other left field things that are going to happen for this basketball program. I like Ryan Blair. Everything, his resume looks good. I think he passes the LinkedIn test, right, Griffin? Everything looks good on the resume. Now he's got to deliver, and he's got to deliver the first one, which is a new head basketball coach, which we'll get into in a second. But the weather's taking a turn here. It was really nice, and then it got really, really cold, Griff.
Yeah, it was 70 degrees yesterday, and then it snowed at night, or maybe that was 2 days ago, whatever it was. I'm keeping losing track of days here. It's Wednesday. On Monday, it was 70, and then it was snowing in the same day, so that's always fun. I guess you can't really say unpredictable because it is Syracuse. Anything can happen. But that's that. It's been cold, and I don't really see it warming up anytime soon.
Hopefully by Easter. All right, Josh?
Hopefully as soon as possible. I mean, yeah. It was literally like t-shirt and shorts weather.
I know.
Into like I had to grab my winter coat by the end of the day. It was one of the most bizarre weather switches inside of like a single 24-hour period that I've ever experienced. That doesn't include like getting on a plane and flying from Florida to Michigan. Like it was literally insane. I couldn't believe it.
Yeah, that's that Monday. You were recording this Wednesday evening. Monday, it was beautiful in the morning. And then by night, it was snowing and freezing cold. That's what you get in Syracuse. And you're also going to get a new head basketball coach for the men's team, as we've alluded to. And we'll get right into the big news. I don't know how many people knew his name before last night, but Jeff Goodman, he works for the Field of 68, right? Came out with a report that said everybody's top target, Ryan Hodgson, turned down the Syracuse job. Didn't really specify what he turned down, if he turned down an official offer, but he said he's not interested. It was then followed up by our good friend Mike Waters. He also reported the same thing. So it seems like Hodgson is out. I'm like, okay, sure, maybe he is out. But I will say, like, I don't know if he's turned down anything official yet. And also, South Florida's season's not over. So yeah. I think it's worth putting a pause on it slightly. I mean, I would be maybe surprised because of how reported it's been if something changed. But I was shocked that this came out before South Florida's season ended. This could also just be agent talk. You know, the agent is trying to work out the best deal for his client. And clearly he sees Syracuse doesn't have a lot of money. And if you ask Jim Boeheim, Syracuse is broke because all he said during the ACC tournament was that this university has no NIL budget, essentially. And that's now the reason why they couldn't land Hodgson. Of course, I think it's also worth noting that St. Louis, their head coach, Josh Sertz, he just signed a big contract with St. Louis. Could South Florida be doing something similar? You know, these lower schools, they now have bigger budgets too, thanks to NIL. All they need is really one donor to kick in, or one NIL fund to kick in, and they can retain these top coaches. But Griffin, this is a dent if you can't land Hodgson. But also, there are other people, believe it or not, that can coach basketball. So I don't like, yes, it's disappointing, but I'm not like, oh no, Syracuse is doomed for the next 20 years. Like, other people can coach basketball.
Yes, they can. I do think this is a big deal, and I do think this is a big problem. Not necessarily because he's not coming, but because you have a coach that is coaching at a non-power conference school saying no to Syracuse men's basketball, which in the past 40, 50 years has been one of the better programs in college basketball history. And so if you have a guy that his biggest job is South Florida saying no to Syracuse when the only other semi-good job is Providence, that's alarming. Does Syracuse not have the budget? Clearly not.
No.
Clearly. And that was something that I thought could be fixed this offseason. You could go get more money. But clearly, Syracuse is still one, two, maybe three or four steps behind a lot of the other good basketball schools. Providence doesn't have a football team, so
No.
they can spend the majority of their NIL on basketball. The rev share money is going to basketball and hockey and some other Olympic sports. But the fact that Syracuse, which is a storied program, has a lot of good alumni, both in basketball and just general, can't compete. They don't have a hockey team. They don't have a baseball team. They should be able to focus more on basketball, a program that's won a national championship. And so, yes, am I upset that Hodgson said no before the NCAA tournament? Yeah. Do I think Syracuse can go get a good coach? Yes. But the fact that he said no before they played, the fact that this was reported, you know, as much as you can talk about Jeff Goodman and people like him and people don't like him, he has a big audience and he reports mostly the
Accurate.
truth. Yeah, exactly.
Mostly true.
Mostly. I mean, there's some people that don't care for him. I'm not going to give my opinion. But when you have someone as big of a platform like he does saying that Syracuse isn't ready, doesn't have the resources, and Brian Hodgson won't even come, won't even say he hasn't said no to USF, he hasn't said no to Providence, he's only said no to Syracuse. That is alarming.
Yeah, I thought the timing of it was really odd.
Certainly.
I don't know how deep into conversations you would have been to generate a real understanding of is he going to come versus is he going to stay at USF versus is he going to go to Providence. I don't understand how a coach with their season, with the most important game of his life, still in front of him. Like they're still focused on beating Louisville tomorrow. I don't understand how Syracuse would have enough of, you know, information on the table that they would have had enough conversations with Hodgson to say he's not coming, or Hodgson has enough information from Syracuse to say I'm not coming.
I
Is
I'll
it
go.
too much tampering? Are they trying to get a little too intimate with him right now while he's busy with the most important game of the season? Is Syracuse trying to push the checkbook and Hodgson saying, whoa, 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 slow down. Like, I got to focus on finishing this season. And they did it just one too many times. And now he said, I'm not coming anymore. Like, forget about it. Like, there's some aspect of time that really just isn't adding up for me entirely. Goodman also said that the financial package needs to be upped for whoever they go after. So I could very well see that maybe, you know, the new athletic director, the new chancellor, get Hodgson on the phone. They basically lay out, here's what's going to happen at the end of the year. You're gonna come over here, and we're gonna give you this much money. And Hodgson was insulted. There's a possibility they offered him $2 million a year to come coach the team, or Hodgson's looking for four. You know, Syracuse. You know, Autry was kind of in the middle of the pack to lower in the conference in terms of salary when he was here, as far as I understand. So maybe they're not looking to spend an astronomically high amount on Hodgson, and he took that as a sign that this isn't the job for him. Now, I'm not going to speculate, but I think the timing of it is definitely interesting, and it's disappointing that you are already seeing, names getting crossed off the list when really I don't think anyone should have even been crossed off at this point. I mean, the season hasn't even ended yet. I think they should be working on getting their horses lined up, and they should be worrying about who they want to hire. But I don't think it should be where they haven't played the game yet and he's already out of the running. I think that is a critical error there by whoever's handling that.
I disagree with you on that. I think in this world of college sports, I think you have to be aggressive and you have to be up in front early. Syracuse is definitely talking with multiple coaches that, well, I guess maybe only one now that are still in the tournament. But you have to, like, I guarantee you Providence has been talking to them the same amount. Like, that's the fact of the matter. When you have in a position that's as important as your head coaching job at a power conference, you need to be talking to the next head coach, even if he is still coaching in March Madness. Like, you've seen it time and again. When Tobin Anderson won that big game a couple of years ago, he got the Iona job like the next morning. Like, they announced it the next morning. So that's just how it works. I don't think they were too aggressive. I just think they couldn't compete, which is just sad.
Well, that's sad because I think then Syracuse athletics is at a hole at a major disadvantage. And this is a serious problem then, because if they can't compete with Providence for one of the, not even the top, one of the better power, non-power four, non-power five coaches, they are at a serious disadvantage. And this is going to get a lot worse before it gets better.
I
I will
agree.
say that they either need to make a decision to increase the NIL astronomically to be in the top three in the ACC, especially for basketball. Or it's going to be more of the same. We're going to get the same product that we saw this season.
And I think that was one of the biggest reasons to bring in Ryan Blair as the new athletic director because of his history, what he did at his previous stop in bringing in a big NIL budget for a non-power four or five school. So I think that was the backing there. And I also find interesting with this report from Goodman, it also implies that Blair, who has been here for less than a week, and I'm assuming with John Wildhack, cooked up a contract rather quickly. So I think that's interesting too. And again, that's where I would just maybe not pump the brakes, but just be like, hold off. Like, nothing's happened yet. Hodgson has not extended a contract to South Florida, and he still hasn't, accepted a contract elsewhere or accepted a team elsewhere. So yes, while it seems like he's turned it down, I mean, I wouldn't be shocked if something changed. Who knows? We'll have to wait and find out. But now the name everyone's pointing to is, of course, Gary McNamara, who I gotta say, all he's gotta do is beat Duke and he has a job. I think if he beats Duke on Thursday, he's got the job. Not saying that's gonna happen. I would not be off be terribly upset if Gary McNamara got the job. I think we were all in agreeance from really as soon as this season, plummeted, that this team just needed something different, different energy, someone outside of the Syracuse lineage. And, of course, I've, emphasized throughout my time here on the podcast that John Wildhack particularly loved to hire from within. Outside of football, everywhere else he's hired from within. Now with this basketball program, does he do that one last time? Of course, in working with, of course, the new athletic director, Brian Blair. The only thing is, though, with McNamara, this is the only window to get him. Because if you pass someone twice, there's no way I don't think he'd be interested a third time. Now, obviously, you don't want that to be the case where you'd have to be interested in him a third time, but this is it. Like, this is the window. I guess, my only concern with him, Griffin, is that the step up, like with Hodgson, it was Arkansas State, then it was South Florida. Like, that was a good progression. Siena to Syracuse, it's a different level. And also with Hodgson, he could bring players from South Florida to Syracuse. I don't necessarily think you can bring players from Siena to Syracuse. I think that would be too much of a jump. And that'd be too much of something we saw the second year under Autry, where he recruited a bunch of guys from lower level schools, and it was a disaster. But, Gary McNamara has still coached a really good season. And I mean, look, if he beats Duke, he has a job, right?
If he beats Duke, you should give him the mountaintops. I think the thing with Jerry McNamara is I was debating on whether I would go get him or Hutchin. That was something that
Okay.
I was kind of conflicted about, I guess internally in my own head, about who would be better for the team. Now that Hutchin seems to be out the door, I think you have to go with G-Mac. And Jerry was an assistant here, was a player here. Yes, I guess you're hiring from within, but he still turned around a Siena program that had 4 wins
Yeah,
and
it was
turned it into
dreadful.
a March Madness team. Like that is good. The part that concerns me about Jerry McNamara is that it seems like the Syracuse fan base doesn't even want him. And to some extent, they should be, I guess, off the hook for that call. But if you scroll on Twitter as much as I do, these fans want to go outside the program.
Yeah.
The thing I am debating between winning with GMAC, which I have said would be worth more than winning it with anyone else. Now, at some point, it doesn't matter who the head coach is if you don't have enough resources. You could have Coach Krzyzewski, but in this college basketball landscape, if you don't have enough NIL money, then it might not matter.
Yeah.
When Josh, you said that they need to get more NIL money, they need to put more resources in. I don't think it's that simple. I think
Then
they've
they're
had.
screwed. Then they're screwed. That's their only choice. That's literally their only choice.
I
No,
think
I
Brian Blair
agree.
is the answer to that. I think that's his
Yes.
whole reasoning for coming in.
I agree, but Brian Blair's had the job for a week,
I
and
know.
his introductory press conference is going to be tomorrow.
Yes.
Like, that is a little alarming. He hasn't been in town. Like,
Well, I
he's busy
mean,
trying to hire the next head basketball coach.
yeah. I mean,
But he's
Wild
still
Hack
like
still is the athletic director until June or July, I think. So, yes.
they're both on the payroll. You're paying for
Are
two
they?
athletic directors.
Ooh, inside the payroll.
So I mean that's the thing. It's not like Syracuse can it's not like they have the money to put into NIL. That's not how it works. They have
They
to
have to
go find
find
it.
it then.
They
They
have to
gotta
they
find
have to
it.
find, and they're struggling to find it.
Well,
That that's what I'm
they
saying. It's
have
under
people that
these
have
snow banks.
wanted to contribute.
Like who?
Adam Weitzman.
Adam
He just
Weitzman
couldn't.
never wanted to contribute.
He gets fans to the games.
That's not contributing.
It's contrib dude, there's
How?
people. What?
Paying for Tom Brady to
Yeah.
come to a Syracuse basketball game is not the same
How is
thing as
that
him
not
at
helpful? How
NIL.
is that not helpful in the
Well,
grand scheme
Tom
of
Brady
things
doesn't give
when you
anyone
need
sure. It
room?
is helpful. It is
It's
helpful.
not
But
physical, but the effect of it. If you're
it,
if
the he's still not donating money to the
Yeah.
basketball program or the athletics
But
department.
it's an after effect thing when you have people like that involved with the program. I'm not saying what Adam Weitzman does or does not do is I'm not gonna state my opinions on that. I'm just gonna say what he did and
It created
basically
eyeballs around this team.
yes, what you want if at all else, if all else fails and you can't generate NIL, if you can get eyeballs like Tom Brady, like Jimmy Fallon, like whoever it is to come to Syracuse games, you are creating a buzz around a team. And right now, this is basically an all-time low. I mean, they haven't been this bad since the 60s. So you have to start finding stuff like that if the NIL is not working. And that's what I think should be the focus. But if you can't generate money, you have to find other ways to keep this team on the map. Because right now, there's no way.
But you have to find money. It doesn't, the
Okay.
eyeballs mean nothing if you can't get money. Nothing, they mean nothing. And Adam Weitzman, if you're listening to this, we extend another offer to come on the Ostrom Avenue podcast and explain maybe if why you never donated to the basketball program, why you never donated to Syracuse Athletics, and maybe you want to get back into NIL at Syracuse, like you have done with Siena and Coach Jerry McNamara. The real point is, Syracuse has had trouble fundraising money for this basketball team. They have had trouble finding NIL money for this basketball team. And Brian Blair is supposed to be a guy that is good at fundraising, is good at kind of building your base, building your revenue up. But if he's only been on the job for a week and Syracuse has struggled to put a package together that attracts a coach more than Providence can put up, that's alarming. And we can say that all you want. If I'm Syracuse right now, Jerry McInerney has proved that he can coach, proved that he can recruit talent, someone that the alumni will go towards and accept. I mean, the big thing, if the fans really don't want to back him, which it doesn't seem like they do, which I think is awful and is shocking and it's a little concerning, then Syracuse is in a no-win situation. Because I can't think of that many other options. I know, Josh, you probably have one or two in your
I
head.
got one. I got a name for
Who?
you.
I got a few. Go ahead.
It's going to be Luke Murray. Luke Murray is going to be the next head basketball
I was
coach
going
at
to say,
Syracuse.
yeah. So you
He's
want
a
so.
phenomenal, no, he's a phenomenal recruiter and he's a phenomenal coach. He
He's an assistant
basically,
coach at UConn for
he
those
doesn't
who.
have any head coaching experience, but in his years at Wagner and in his years at UConn, what he has done with these teams. I don't know why, in a dying state of a program, you would not take a shot at this guy. This could be the home run hire that turns this program around.
Here's my question. If you're Luke Murray and you're regarded as one of the top assistants, you've
Yeah, I
coached
know you're
under
going
Dan
with that.
Hurley at UConn, Syracuse doesn't have the resources, why the heck would you want to come to Syracuse?
Why wouldn't you want a head coaching job? Why do you want to be an
That
assistant coach
UConn
for the rest
seat
of
is
your life?
pretty good, I bet.
And it's not even about that, because yes, UConn is a great school. You could wait another coaching cycle. Last year, there were a lot of schools that opened up. This year, not a lot of schools. The best jobs are Arizona State, Syracuse, Providence, and Kansas State. And Kansas State is already taken. Providence and Syracuse are fighting over the same guy, and they both not might not end up with him.
UNC is a spot I could think that could open, not this year, but next year.
Oof, I don't know about that. But if you're Luke Murray, and hey, I'll take my assistant coach salary and a chance to win a national championship one more year at UConn, and then see if maybe an SEC school opens up, a Big Ten school opens up, maybe a good Big 12 school. Why would you want to come to Syracuse? And that shouldn't be the case. It should never be the case. Syracuse should be one of the top 15
Okay,
jobs
well,
in the country.
they
They
well,
should be one
one
of the
of
top
what well,
15
no, one of
jobs.
these sides has to give though.
But
Luke, either Luke Murray has to be hired, and you have to take a chance, or you continue to stay in your own backyard. What they've been doing with hiring Blair as like an out of the program, minimal, no Syracuse ties, you can't revert back to that right away.
I
You
think you
can't
can.
do that. You have to find someone else that's not on the radar. It can't be Hopkins, it can't be McNamara. It has to be
Oh, no.
someone outside
Yeah.
of the program that has no ties so that you can completely revamp what this team should be.
Well,
I don't
yes,
think.
I agree with you, Josh. Now, I think it's a little different though, is because it's a totally different team. So it's not like you'd have to get like wrinkle out bad habits because you're going to have a basically a new roster next year.
Yeah.
But I see what you're saying in going outside the family. And also with Brian Blair, no one was saying his name. I don't think so. I mean,
No, no one said his name.
anyone on the Twitter sphere, the X sphere saying his name before he got hired? I don't think so. So there could be someone we have no idea that is, that could be a name. Who knows? And who knows how good of hiring Brian Blair is. I mean, this is test number one. And again, he's doing this with John Weilheck, which I think is important to note. It'll be interesting. It's gonna be interesting when. Timing's gonna be very, very interesting to me. Is it once a coach is out of the tournament? Is it a month later? That will be very interesting. Plenty of names to talk about, to discuss about. The Ostrom Avenue podcast will have you covered with it all, no matter who it is, for the next head coach of Syracuse men's basketball. But for the women's team, they are focused on the tournament. They did get that tournament bid. It was kind of exactly where we thought they would fall, and they're going to be they got a tough test this weekend against number they're the 9 seed. Iowa State is the 8th seed. They're in Storrs, Connecticut, because where else would they have gone? That's where the committee basically seemingly liked them since early January. Big knock though for them though, Griffin, is Dominique Darius. She got hurt in the ACC tournament.
had to have surgery, so she's not going to be available for the entire tournament. That's a lot of offense you're losing. That's going to put even more pressure on the likes of Sophie Burrows and Leila Filho.
Yeah, it really stinks. I think that, you know, UConn's always going to be a tough beat, but you would have had a really, really good chance in winning with Dominique Darius and winning the first game, obviously.
Yeah.
I think Syracuse can still do it. They can still beat Iowa State. Addie Crooks is their best player, one of the best players in the country. She's a really fun player to watch. It'll be a good matchup with her versus Uche Azoje. It's good. Coach Jack has this team winning 20 games and making the tournament. Like, that should be the standard. Hopefully Syracuse can get out of this 8-9 seed next year and build forward. I think for this team, like, you win this game and that would conclude another good season under Coach
Absolutely.
Jack. I think doing it, especially with kind of what was happening in the beginning of the season, we held Sophie Burrows to a really high standard, and she struggled out of the gate. Only shot 31% from three this season, but she made strides, definitely got better over the course of the season. You didn't really know what this team was going to give you. And the fact that they made the NCAA tournament as a 9 seed, like, a lot of credit to Coach Jack. In a season where the men's team was talked about a lot, this team definitely deserved to be talked about a lot more.
Yeah, 100%. Yeah, I think it's a tough draw, right? Already with Darius out, it's a pretty tough matchup. But I mean, Audie Crooks and Uche Azoje is going to be a good matchup. But I do think Iowa State has a severe upper hand here, because I think Azoje is going to be she's going to be really she's going to have to be really perfect on defense, because Crooks is really probably the best interior scorer in all of college basketball. And, you know, Azoje's had some foul trouble throughout the season. So Iowa State, really all they have to do is attack Azoje early, get her in foul trouble, and it's going to really wrap up the game from there. Because, I mean, this is a game that's going to be ultimately defined by that matchup. So whoever can – if Azoje can somehow get Crooks in foul trouble, she doesn't play much defense. If Azoje can get her in foul trouble and kind of reverse it on her, maybe this team can hang around. But I don't see that really happening. This is a one of the more tougher matchups they would have. And then obviously if they do win, that date with UConn on Monday night would be it'd be about 20 times tougher than any fight Iowa State would give them. But obviously they're still in it, and I think they had a great season, and I was happy that the season played out the way it did. I was super high on this team. I don't even think they achieved their full ceiling. I thought this team could have won a couple more games and could have even gotten themselves a 5 or a 6 seed. And maybe could have earned a couple more games, maybe another weekend in the NCAA tournament, but nothing to hang their heads at, and a phenomenal year for them.
Certainly. It really is needed that one quad one win, one or two could have gotten them out of that, that tricky range. Still got to play the game. I'm never doubting a team that's coached by Felicia Leggett-Jack. You can never count her teams out, but they certainly need more scoring from Leila Filho. She can't go 3 of 14 again. That's what she went last time out against Louisville, and got to have more than 12 points as well. Sophie Burrows went 4 of 14, 2 of 10 from three-point land as well. So, yes, Uche Azoje is going to, you know, you'll need her scoring bulk, but you need those supporting cast, especially those guards, to step up as well. That's 5:30 on Saturday, and the team that is finally coming back home is the men's lacrosse team after – this big road trip that was well documented. In the end, they come back with a winning record after they sneak by. I mean, every game the team is playing this year, it's always close. It's always a little nervy, even against Air Force on last Thursday, 17-11. I don't say it was super comfortable. It was comfortable at the end, but maybe not super comfortable. And Griffin Denver gave the Orange all they could handle, 13-12. I definitely like the way this team is learning how to close out late games, but you're still waiting for some really convincing performances. Really, even, you know, Maryland was really convincing, but it seems like since then it's kind of dipped down in performances since that game, which was now way back in early February.
It's been interesting the way that this team has played. They've had a different, I guess, tone to them in every single game of this road trip. Like the first two games were chalked up, tough losses. You weren't really ready to have that, to be on the road that early. Hopkins and Penn game was way too close for comfort. Syracuse should have handled them a little better. Hopkins, Syracuse, they played well and they kind of controlled the game the whole way. And then once you get to this Colorado trip, okay, Air Force, not that great of a team. Altitude, how is that going to play into effect? And Syracuse didn't have a control as much in the first half. The second half, they kind of ran away with it. And then obviously, Denver, they commanded most of the game, and then Denver in the fourth quarter pulled away. So it was just an interesting trip. 4-2, if I had to say that at the beginning, I would be like, okay, fine. You get 4-2 on that road trip and you can come home and get back into the dome, but also play a tough schedule. Looking back, should they have an extra win on that on the record? Probably. I'm not too much alarmed. They are ranked number two in RPI. That came out today. I know, AJ, you're a big fan of the lacrosse RPI. So that's interesting. The fact that they're above Harvard. Harvard's like ranked 10 in RPI for men's lacrosse, so that's interesting. Princeton's ranked number one. The big test will be the next two games. Can Syracuse take care of business against two ranked teams at home? Georgetown, who started the season ranked number five, have had some struggles. They're now ranked number 13. And then you play Duke at home. Duke's always a good team. They always give Syracuse trouble at home. So that'll be another interesting game where you have two of these squads. Georgetown, they haven't beaten a ranked opponent this season. They haven't won a game on the road this season. So that will be interesting. And then once you get to Duke, John Nanowski is a good coach. We'll probably have him on the Ostrom Avenue podcast next week. He's a big friend of the program. So it'll be interesting. Syracuse, they have some work to do. Joey now second place in points, this team, I think this team's on the right track. My confidence hasn't wavered too much.
Georgetown did beat Loyola last night on the road, and they've looked a lot better. They had a little bit of a slower start to the season. They also have that common win over Penn. They
Oh,
beat
yeah,
Penn
that'd
the
be
weekend
Penn.
before Syracuse went down there, and beat them by 3 goals. And Penn was ranked after that game. So maybe not a ranked win, but definitely a solid team, and that they're definitely going to give Syracuse a fight. I thought at the start of the trip, I was thinking this is an epic fail. Like, they lost their first two games. They're going to need to win out in order to make this trip a success, right? 3-3 would be a fail in my opinion. You can't really afford to go 500 and for the rest of the season and make the tournament. Like, that's just not how it works. But they figured it out. They stepped up. I do think there's a little bit of concern right now with the inconsistencies of this offense. I mean, you look at the first game on the road trip, Harvard. You go scoreless in the second quarter. And you don't score the last 6.5 minutes of the game, and Harvard scores three, and you lose that one. Princeton, you don't score in the first 24 minutes of that game, and you're down 6-0 before you even know what hit you. And then you had the Denver game, where they score in the first minute of the game, and then they don't score for the rest of the first quarter. They have a 15-minute scoring drought. So the inconsistency is probably going to come as the season rolls on, but you'd really prefer to see them kind of sharpen that down the stretch, and a little bit of an easier draw here the last three after playing the three Ivies, but definitely some cause for concern. I think they can fall asleep sometimes. They are a little bit lazy on offense. Definitely less in the Denver game than in games past. I mean, you had Finn Thompson right off the bat knocks the ball out of Grayson Manning's hands and out of his stick and finds Peyton Anderson for a quick goal. It was moments like that. Billy Dwan taking advantage of Manning out of the net and fires from midfield and scores a long pole goal. So I think there are you're starting to see some of those get cleaned up, but still not entirely sure why we're still seeing some of these 15, 20-minute droughts this late into the season. And Denver, fantastic defensive team. Grayson Manning was leading the nation in goals. Sorry, save percentage entering that game. So that was already going to be a tough matchup. And you're really looking at it like Spallina versus Manning. Well, Spoelstra only puts up 2 points, and you still win the game. And I think that's going to be the story of the season. And what we thought it was going to be coming in is Spoelstra can be a playmaker, but there's so much talent on this team that surrounds him that Syracuse should be fine, regardless if Spoelstra has a 0 or a 1 point game, because you have guys like Luke Roa putting up 4 goals. Finn Thompson has scored multiple goals all 6 games of that road trip. So there's really just a lot of mouths to feed on this offense, and it seems like they're doing just a fine job of making sure everyone is involved. Excited for the Georgetown game, though. They lost the last match, but I believe it was 2021. They lost by 10 goals, so they're looking for some revenge. Not obviously any of these players playing in that game, but certainly a chance to continue this hot streak. And this team came out at second in the RPI today, so this team in a good spot right now with about a month and a half left to play in the regular season.
Josh took the words right out of my mouth. I say the RPI. I'm the RPI guy, as you mentioned. Syracuse second, right behind Princeton in that all-important lacrosse RPI. Forget about, we love inside lacrosse, but their rankings. We
love inside lacrosse.
Their rankings are very confusing, especially this year. we're going to talk women's lacrosse, but I was going to get to this at the end. This is my last episode on the Ostrom Avenue podcast, and one of my favorite debates I had in my 3 years was with Griffin and Georgetown, whether or not this is a rivalry. So come on, Griffin, is Sunday's game a rivalry?
No, it is not. Unfortunately, not. I still think Syracuse should play Georgetown in basketball. I still
Agreed.
Think that should,
every year.
I think that should happen. I think people who don't want to see it, you know, people like to say, keep it in the past, keep it in the past. But I'm saying, hey, Syracuse needs a rival in basketball. Pitt is a fake rival. Boston College, a
BC's
fake
been
rival. You know, get them out of here. Bring back Georgetown. You know, people want Syracuse to rejoin the Big East, so might as well keep
no.
one Big East tradition. But, you know, there's only so much you can do. And,
Yeah. If people want Syracuse to have NIL money, they should not go anywhere near the Big East.
Well, unless you want to drop football.
Yeah, which I don't think you want to do. Syracuse and Georgetown, that's at 1 p.m. On Sunday against, it's a 13th ranked Georgetown side. To the hottest team on campus, though, that is women's lacrosse. Talk about a turnaround. And not that they were struggling to start the season, because when you play three top 10 ranked teams in the country, that's not an easy way to start. But since that narrow defeat to the number one team in the country, North Carolina, this team has rattled off now six, yeah, correct with that, six straight wins? Yeah, six straight W's. They just picked up another one against another top 10 ranked team in the country in Yale, 6-5. I mean, got to pat Reggie Thorpe here on the back, Griffin. I mean, he's done some really nice things with this team. And, you know, this schedule, we were all saying, like, holy smokes, it's a hard start. But now that's kind of the runway, you know, the game. Now, they're still tough games, of course, but it's nothing like the start of the season.
Yeah, no. I mean, the fact that you played the top three teams in the first three games, then you still had two top five games like that early in the season, it is fun and challenging. The fact that Syracuse beat Northwestern, who was number four, and Yale, who was number five, that's really promising. A road Northwestern game, it's hard to win in Evanston. I know the game was played indoors and was played in like a bubble, but still, like that's a hard game to win. Obviously you had the whole Olivia Adamson drama maybe in there as well, but it was nice to see that Coach Thorpe is getting some quality wins, and that doesn't change. And then you still play another top 20 team in Virginia on Saturday, and that's a big game for Virginia. It's their 50th anniversary of their team being founded, and it's playing at the football stadium, which is kind of cool. So that'll be an interesting game, you know. We Rick Beardsley told us, watch out for this women's lacrosse team.
Yeah,
Watch
he
out
did.
for Danielle Guyette, who had a great game against Yale. Probably the only reason why Syracuse won that game. You know, all this, there was some chatter about goalies not even mattering, and you know, I'm not gonna call out some people, but
oh goodness,
I think those takes are objectively awful. Big game for Dan Guyette, and you know, the Orange take care of business against Yale, and now carry the momentum. Maybe like you, I mean, the rest of their schedule is good. They don't play like a top 10 team the rest of the way, right? As of right now, But this could be the year they finally beat BC. BC hasn't looked that great, you know.
The gap year for the Eagles.
I know, which is kind of crazy. So this would be fun. I think this Syracuse women's lacrosse team might be one to look out for. There's not like that star player they've had the last 5-6 years.
Oh, come on.
Molly Guzik is very good.
I would say she's the star of the team.
I would say she
just
is
scored
too.
6 goals at Northwestern.
But she's not like, she doesn't have the name recognition or the star power as like.
Griff, she's a sophomore, bro.
I know, but the Carnies, the Ward, Emma Ward, you know, they had some power to them. Like I don't Molly Guzik hasn't reached that level yet. She might be on her way there, but I think this team is a well-rounded team. They're very deep, and I think that's
they're
what
young. And they're young. AJ, I'm not gonna stand for that. He said there's no star on this team. I disagree.
All right.
I think Molly Guzik is certainly the star of this team. Already 25 goals on the season for Molly Guzik. This Yale win was huge, by the way. Yale was and probably still after this game. I mean, it was 6-5. There was like an entire quarter without goals until late in that third quarter. Yale comes into this game allowing 5 goals a game, and you knew it was going to take at least 5 goals to beat them because they have been very stout defensively. And, you know, Syracuse edges Yale 6-5. I know a lot of the players were talking about last season and how they knocked them out of the tournament and they lost to them twice and how that was a big motivating factor. And the Orange Faithful showed out, over 2,200 people in the dome for a Tuesday game at 4:30 in the afternoon. I mean, there's definitely something to be said for that. I think fans are really starting to come around to this team after that. A little bit of a slower start. I mean, obviously you don't want to dig yourself a hole. Scheduling the top three teams in the country at the start of the year certainly doesn't help you out, but it looks like AJ and Griffin, it worked because after playing the best of the best, Syracuse has handled everyone. 9 opponents on this season now, and 6 of those 9 opponents have posted season lows in goals when they play against Syracuse. So that is definitely something to be said for Reggie Thorpe, specifically the defensive end on this team. And I think they keep rolling. I mean, they're hot right now. They got a nice little 2-game road trip coming up. They've been in the dome for most of March, and you know they get to hit the road here in the back half. And I think we're looking at a team that's probably going to be in contention for the ACC title. I mean, UNC probably runs away with it, but I mean, Syracuse could very well win a couple more games. If UNC falters, Syracuse could very well be playing for the ACC championship at the end of this year. And I think the way they're playing right now, they're certainly going to earn a bid into the NCAA tournament.
Certainly. It'll be a really good team to watch under new head coach Reggie Thorpe. We've definitely liked what we've seen early on. They hit the road. They play number 19 Virginia on Saturday at 2 p.m. That's then before almost coming back home. They have a midweek contest. Love that women's lacrosse still plays midweek games. They play UAlbany on Tuesday. Would love to see that from men's lacrosse. And my parting rant, and I want to get your guys' thoughts on this. I don't know if there's really an opinion, is that with men's lacrosse right now, it is too hard to watch the damn games.
Oh.
I'm so glad we have WAER, because I would have had no way of watching yesterday. I had no way of watching Syracuse versus Denver because I do not live in Denver. And it was a game that was only on a Denver sports network. Thank goodness I have 88.3. I had a fantastic time listening to the game. But right now, number one Notre Dame, number one Richmond, number two Richmond, it does not have a TV. That game does not have a TV provider right now because Notre Dame's spring game is on the same day. And if people don't know this, NBC Peacock runs Notre Dame, essentially, television-wise. So their focus is on the spring game. So there is no one that is picking up that game right now. And that could be a similar problem for Syracuse and Notre Dame, because I'm sorry, I flipped it around. Syracuse, Notre Dame, that's when Notre Dame's spring game is. I'm not sure why no one is going to be airing this Notre Dame Richmond game, but it's just it's absurd how hard it is to watch the cross. And everyone's like, oh, well, you know, ESPN has all these other things to broadcast. There's other networks that are just not ESPN. Other networks broadcast games. I'm looking at Fox, CBS, even YouTube. Look what the NFL did. The NFL puts games on YouTube and Netflix.
Why can lacrosse not get a big TV deal for these games? Because they're very entertaining. And yes, I know, oh, it's only in the Northeast people care about lacrosse. And, you know, of course, you have the few West Coast, or not West Coast teams out West, and then Duke and North Carolina, basically. But college baseball is a Southern thing. That's all in the South and out West. That's not a Northeast thing. So they can definitely make it work. They just got to get a TV deal. And it does not have to be with ESPN.
The problem with the Notre Dame Richmond thing is the fact that it's at Northwestern. It's a neutral site game for those two teams. And since Northwestern is a Big Ten school, the ACC, and I think it was Richmond in the
A-10.
Is that a conference for lacrosse? I don't think either team has really said, or either conference has really said, we're going to send our network there to cover this game, which I agree with you, AJ, is a massive problem. If you have two undefeated teams that are the number one and number two team in the country, and it's not being broadcast live, I don't think you can even make an argument anymore for how awfully bad college lacrosse continues to shoot itself in the foot. And that goes with the Syracuse-Denver game and all of the other games where you have to pay $16 to watch a single game of lacrosse. And that's it. Like, there's so many examples, and I think this would just continue to be another example of why can't lacrosse just seem to figure it out and either make one network. We get an inside lacrosse network where all of these games are streamed on the same thing, and it's $20 a month to watch every single game. I don't know why it can't be done.
And then, of course, you have the Penn State. Before you go, Griff, you had the Penn State North Carolina debacle where the play-by-plays is just awful integrity for lacrosse, too. That
he doesn't like Booker Corrigan, no.
Apparently, they were doing the replays, which is awful. So over to you, Griff.
He did say he wasn't doing it. He didn't have an effect on it, okay?
I don't know. It's hard because in a sport like lacrosse, which is trying to grow, it's a great sport to watch. It shouldn't be this way. Like it should be easy. It should be accessible. And it's just shooting itself in the foot. And it's sad because, you know, we all love this sport and there's a lot of people that do as well. And so we just want to see other people appreciate lacrosse, you know, just as much as we appreciate AJ Myers, who's spent, you know, 2 years on this podcast, has dedicated his life and soul to everything Ostrom Avenue podcast related. You know, it's his final episode, but you know, we'll be thinking of you, AJ, as we talk about this lacrosse team and whoever the heck the new basketball coach is. And you know, maybe they don't even hire a basketball coach. Maybe they bring AJ in. And,
I was gonna say, you know, maybe AJ leaves the podcast because he's getting the gig as Syracuse head basketball.
Yeah, no, don't need to start that rumor. I did some little, you know, researching for myself. 82 episodes of the Ostrom Avenue podcast. Loved all 82 of them. So what we talked about on my first episode. It was episode 182 of the podcast. It was came out on April 4th, and the headlines were Judah Mintz leaving Syracuse, Malik Brown entering the transfer portal, and Eddie Lampkin Jr.'s commitment to Syracuse. Wow. And, you know, I was like, oh, yeah, expectations. Things are maybe looking up with Eddie Lampkin joining the Orange. It is funny to look back. We also talked about some Donnie Freeman, of course, and of course, Syracuse men's lacrosse. I think they just lost to Cornell in overtime. So that was, again, two seasons ago before they even got to the Final Four. But
that was an awful men's lacrosse game. It was like raining in Ithaca and it went to overtime. Yeah, I remember that one. That was awful.
It was brutal. But in all seriousness, I've loved doing the podcast. I'm thankful to Jordan. Leonard, who offered it to me those 2 years ago. The way it works, once basketball season's over, that is the goodbye for the senior class. And I'm so grateful to be in such a strong senior class at WAER and at Syracuse. I'm gonna miss it a lot. I can't believe it's over. I'm going to be an avid listener to Griffin and Josh. I can't wait to hear all their lacrosse coverage. It's going to be great. They have great insight. They've had it since the start of the season. They're going to have it through the rest of the way and into football as well. And what an interesting third year it will be for Fran Brown. I'm going to be listening next year because this is how I'm going to keep up to date on everything. And that's what I love about the podcast. I do want to thank my parents, my mom and dad. They always listened, and I appreciate that. My sister, my brother-in-law, my girlfriend as well.
They all listen, so I appreciate that. I really appreciate working with you, Griffin. It's been great. Our little mini arguments, our debates, have been fun. And if Syracuse and Georgetown, if that pops up, you know, if Gary McNamara, I'm sure he wants to play Georgetown again. So maybe they'll get that one back on the schedule. And Josh, it's been great to bring you in here in the last few months. That's it for me. Thank you everyone for listening to me for the last, 2 years, I guess. Plenty of more content to come. We got a men's lacrosse game on Sunday. I got to pull up the time, as I always do at the end.
I think it's 1 o'clock.
It's at 1 o'clock, so that lines us up for a 12:30 countdown to face off, and then the double overtime immediately following. Be sure to listen to that one and the rest of the way on WAER. And, of course, you can listen to old episodes of the Ostrom Avenue podcast. You can listen to episode 182. If you really want to. I don't think you do, though. I would bring back some dark times with Eddie Lampkin. Great guy. Just didn't pan out for him. But you can listen to more relevant episodes, like a few weeks ago when we talked to some great guests we've talked to in recent weeks. So be sure to do that wherever you get your podcast or at WAER.org. That'll do it for me and for the pod this week. Griffin and Josh, we'll have you the rest of the way. Thanks for listening, everybody.